The Welfare Fund against Great Lakes Maintenance is the next case for argument. Mr. Greenberg.
May it please the court, this is a matter that's coming to be heard in respect to a second action that was filed by the funds against the Great Lakes Company seeking contributions, or actually seeking an audit, for a period of time subsequent to that which was earlier brought in the first action. The first action was commenced in March of 2000 and sought an audit covering a period from August of 1999 through and including March of 2000. Ultimately, that audit was conducted and a determination of delinquencies was made, and the parties entered into a stipulation to dismiss that action, setting forth a payment program, paying in full all of the deficiencies that were determined to be due and owing, paying in full the liquidated damages, interest, and attorney's fees and costs. Subsequent to the payment period provided for in the stipulation, it was brought to fund counsel's attention that the Great Lakes Company was once again delinquent. An action was commenced, or a motion was commenced under 60B, claiming a mistake had been made and seeking to open up the initial dismissal of the first case. Judge Guzman determined that there was no appropriate mistake that would fall within the 60B provision, and that as such there was no right to open or vacate the dismissal of the first case. He went beyond that in dicta and also interpreted the stipulation that had been filed by the parties, and in essence determined that the stipulation would also terminate the fund's rights to seek contributions now claimed to be due and owing for periods after that initial audit, which had now been satisfied. It is our position that Judge Guzman went beyond his authority in making such a determination, that determination was mere dicta, and that as such it had no particular effect.
I don't see where that gets you, because the release...
I'm sorry, Matt?
I don't see where that gets you. The release says it applies to all claims that were or could have been filed before the date of the release.
That's correct, Your
Honor. Months
doesn't
before
say
the date of the
before
release,
the date of the release, Your Honor.
Counsel,
it specifically says.
Counsel,
I'm sorry.
Months before the date of the release were claims that could have been filed.
Specifically, Your Honor, the language of the release says all claims that were or could have been asserted in the above entitled lawsuit. The above entitled lawsuit contained a specific claim for relief, which was an audit to cover a specific period.
Right.
That's
the claims that were made, and then the second provision of the release refers to claims that could have been made,
and
obviously including claims that were not made.
Well, Your Honor, at the time of the filing of this lawsuit, the only claims that could have been made with regard to the audit was through the date of the lawsuit. What, in essence, Judge Guzman ruled,
the date,
maybe
the
court is following, is that we could have amended...
Counsel, when a judge asks a question, you should stop talking and listen to the question.
I'm sorry, you might not have heard it.
I did not hear,
you
I'm sorry.
Said something about the date it was filed. You're talking about when the claim was filed. Is that what you're trying to do, is cut it off as of the date of filing? Is that the claim made?
The
as
release,
opposed to when it could have been amended, as Judge Guzman said?
That's correct.
Well, I have a question just in that area. Is there a difference between what you would call claim preclusion and issue preclusion?
We believe the preclusion relates strictly to the initial actions and relief sought for.
Because it seems that what you're really doing here is appealing what Judge Guzman's Guzman's, I guess, decision. You think he shouldn't have gotten into the interpretation of the stipulation when he did, because that's what he said you should have been able, because it wasn't filed until much later, you should have amended the complaint. Wouldn't that have to be appealed if you were going to challenge his interpretation?
If we were to appeal the Judge Guzman determination denying us the right to vacate the dismissal, we believe we would have been constrained simply to the 60B requisites. We could not have appealed what we believe was mere dicta, that being an interpretation of the relief.
But he called it
of the release.
He said it was not excusable neglect or something like that.
That's correct.
And you say, of course, it's not neglect at all because the time period was confined.
And that's correct, Your Honor.
Isn't that an appealable issue?
Okay. We don't believe it was appealable at that time because, again, Judge Guzman's decision was based on 60B. That was what was before him, uh-huh. And that was what he was obligated to do, and that was to determine whether within the purview of 60B there had been a mistake, okay. Such a mistake that would allow for the vacation of the dismissal and the reinstatement of the action. So what we're saying is we don't believe Judge Guzman had the authority to interpret the stipulation, nor, for example, to if some payment had not been made under the terms of the stipulation and to enforce the terms of the stipulation. He had not retained jurisdiction to do so, and the courts are very clear, the U.S. Supreme Court and Conconin have indicated that...
Conconin has no bearing on this case, because the underlying claim is for unpaid contributions. It's a direct claim for unpaid contributions. You obviously believe that there's jurisdiction over such a claim. That's the basis of the jurisdiction in this suit. If there's federal jurisdiction in this suit, there was federal jurisdiction at the time Judge Guzman acted, because it's the very same claim for particular months' unpaid contributions.
Well, we were seeking a vacation for that purpose, and we were wrong. And Judge Guzman appropriately ruled on the issue of 60B relief.
As Judge Mannion said, and I've said, the judge's name is Guzman.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Our position is, Your Honor, again, that the determination of the efficacy of the stipulation was beyond the authority and the jurisdiction of Judge Guzman at that time. The requisites of res judicata are that there has to be a final judgment of the previous case on the merits by a court of competent jurisdiction. It's our position that Judge Guzman had, at that time, jurisdiction to determine whether or not 60B requisites had been followed. It is also our position that the cause of action in this matter, the second matter, is not the same. It covers a different time period. We do not believe we had, as Judge Guzman seemed to indicate, obligation to file an amended complaint. The reality of it is, Your Honor, when we sought an action for an accounting covering a specific period of time, and we ultimately obtained the information, we were able to determine the deficiencies for that period of time, I expect we could have come into the court again and asked for a new accounting for a new period of time, superseding that, but I don't believe we were obligated to do so, and in all reality, the courts, the lower courts, are not very disposed to have one come in over and over again seeking additional relief to that which is prayed for in the original complaint. For that reason, Your Honor, I believe that this matter should be overturned.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Greenberg. Mr. Perna.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honor, I'd like to make a correction. I will be the only attorney making an argument this morning. For some reason, we had it separated. Your Honor, to start out with, this matter is one that falls squarely within what Judge Guzman had done earlier on in the previous case. His interpretation and ruling in that case...
Let me ask you why you moved to dismiss the complaint under Rule 12b-6. I must say I don't understand that. The complaint plainly states a claim on which relief may be granted. You have a defense of release. Release is an affirmative defense. You can't assert an affirmative defense as a reason to dismiss under Rule 12b-6.
Your Honor, we filed the motion at the direction of Judge Kaur. We actually had filed two motions, and Judge Kaur requested that we file an additional motion seeking judgment on the pleadings based upon...
That's a different motion from motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim.
I understand that, Your Honor. It was an oversight on our part, Your Honor. That's all I can argue there, but it was definitely a release, and it was actually...
Your adversary has chosen not to appeal, but dismissing this suit under 12b-6 was just very difficult to understand.
Yes, Your Honor. Looking at Judge Guzman's ruling, clearly the stipulation to dismiss was incorporated in Judge Guzman's order of February 22nd, which was the order dismissing the case with prejudice. All the cases which counsel cites, including Coconut and the rest of the cases, clearly are cases in which there was a settlement agreement that was separate from the dismissal order. It was not made part or even referred to in the dismissal order. In this instance, that matter was fully set forth in the dismissal order. He dismissed the case pursuant to that language. When counsel brought his 60B motion saying that he had made a mistake, he clearly was recognizing the preclusive effect of the stipulation that he had entered into, that the language could have clearly prevented him from bringing actions which he could have amended the original action to include. In doing so, he opened the door and allowed Judge Guzman to look at the stipulation to dismiss and to make a determination as to what was meant in the interest of the parties. That matter was fully argued, and unfortunately, because he did not appeal that argument, those transcripts and the pleadings are not before the court. We do feel that the attempt at filing this action a second time was an attempt to get around the original ruling by Judge Guzman, of which he did not appeal.
Would the effect of this stipulation, stipulation would to dismiss, would that have a running time period until it's actually entered, the dismissal is actually entered?
Yes. Well, the stipulation was entered on February 16th, and the dismissal order was entered on February 22nd.
But after December, obviously.
But after it would have been our argument that it would have gone through the entry of the order, the stipulation and the order. So at the end of February, if there were delinquencies in March, it would have brought those up. If you
of 2001, I believe.
2001.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, had it been done, let's say in, I don't know, June or July, which I guess it could have been, would that have cut it off then too?
Yes.
So whatever took place from between June or July and December, these delinquencies, they could have filed a new suit on.
If they had not released it under the stipulation, yes,
they
could have.
That's the if I'm asking about.
Well, clearly in the stipulation, it is our opinion and was the intent of the parties at the time to release all actions up until the time of the entry of the stipulation.
Okay, but that stipulation could have been entered kind of any time after it was signed, couldn't it?
True, but if you review the final paragraph of the stipulation calls for the right to reinstate. At the time of reinstatement, it clearly states that he would be allowed a judgment for the amounts unpaid pursuant to the stipulation, plus any amounts that have accrued after the execution of the stipulation.
So it's still on then.
Excuse me.
It's still in effect.
The stipulation. No, the stipulation would only have run through the execution date.
I'm just saying, so the execution date does make a difference.
Yes, it does.
It does cut it off.
Yes.
And it could have been cut off a lot earlier.
Arguably, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. Well, I also trying to frame their claim and maybe distinguish it between a claim preclusion and issue preclusion. Is there a difference in this case?
Your Honor, I don't believe so. I believe in this case they clearly have the claims were clearly precluded, first of all, on the stipulation, and then I believe, again, the issues themselves were precluded by Judge Guzman's ruling and interpretation of the stipulation, or actually, more correctly, the interpretation of his order. It's our opinion that he had ancillary jurisdiction to make the rulings he did, since it was a matter which was referred to directly in his order. He was only going forward and doing that which any federal court judge would do, and that was giving authority and efficacy to the orders that he entered in his court. I have nothing further if the panel has any additional questions.
Thank you, Mr. Perna. Anything further, Mr. Greenberg?
Thank you.
Justice, Your Honor, Judge Guzman, in his ruling, went into the stipulation and the facts and circumstances and meaning of it, again indicating that we had an obligation or the right, at least, which we acknowledge, to file an amended complaint. But we do not believe that the case law required us to file an amended complaint. We do not believe that the stipulation went beyond its terms, which was the case in hand, not for periods of audit after that, which we could have filed for. So we probably were incorrect in filing a 60B motion, and we don't believe, however, Judge Guzman had the authority, jurisdiction to rule on that issue as to the efficacy of the stipulation. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.